I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're Building Bridges.
The U.S. faces the largest strike ever in the history of this country, as 350,000 UPS workers ready to strike for a fair contract.
Antonio Rosario, a member of Teamsters for a Democratic Union, is a member of Teamster Local 804 and is raising hell for a fair contract.
We interviewed Antonio Rosario in April after he spoke at a Teamsters for a Democratic Union fundraising event. After that, we move on to our live interview with Antonio Rosario.
You really going to go on strike?
I believe so. The company is not bargaining in good faith. Our international president already said that if these supplements aren't done, he's not going to do any national negotiating with them. But at the end of the day, he's basically saying to them, hey, you take care of my locals and their supplements and their riders, then you can come talk to us on the international level. So if they continue to play games, I don't see where we come to an agreement by July 31st. Clock is ticking. So the ball's in their court. They have to 31st to answer our proposals. If they don't, we will be on the street.
And the proposals are, I know, two-tier is one of them.
Absolutely. We want to make sure that the two-tier jobs are out. We want Martin Luther King Day and Juneteenth as a holiday for all our workers, and there's no cost neutrality. They're saying to us, what's in it for us? Nothing's in it for you. You're going to give our workers another day off. You're going to give our workers another 2 days off, and that's just the way it's going to be because we've been working our asses off. You've made billions of dollars off our backs, especially during a pandemic. You made over $13 billion in profit, 13.9 to be exact. Your CEO made $27 million within the last year. Your shareholders have lined their pockets. And where is the money for the workers? Another thing, the UPS likes to parade around the driver salary and the feeder drivers who drive the tractor-trailer salary. They like to parade them around. They are the face of the company. But they never mention the inside workers, the part-time workers. Why Ron Carey said in 97, part-time America don't work. Why? Because they barely make minimum wage. That's why. That's what she fails to mention. The fact that they have bad pensions, they're not making enough money, and they're really the backbone of some of this company.
You led this off by saying two-tier must go.
Right. So
what exactly does that mean?
That means that the two-tier job that was created under the contract that Hoffa rammed down the throats of the membership in 2018, where they created a two-tier job, which was basically a lower-paid tier driver that was sold to us as a driver that would work inside and outside to relieve overtime for workers, it ended up becoming a lower-paid driver job. And they're doing exactly what the drivers do with none of the protections. They have no protection against overtime. They work to the bone, to the death. I mean, these guys are out there. These guys and girls are out there all night long. They have no protections. They can't go on what they call an 8-hour request load like our drivers can, like our regular package car drivers. They can't ask for or go on what they call the 9-5 list, where they're only supposed to work for a certain amount of hours, the 9-5, a few times a week. They have none of those protections. So it's kind of unfair. It's an unfair position that was created.
What do you see the role of TGU now? Now, you got involved, you said, when you were 22. And while you still look 22 and you have that vigor and energy, I think there's a couple of years that have passed since then. So what do you see the function of TGU, particularly given the fact that I can't help but say, but there is a leadership that was once Hofferites.
Yes.
And clearly they're kind of taking the lead now, but will they hold firm? Will they have that militancy? And again, the function of TDU.
Well, I'll tell you what, the secret of TDU has always been grassroots organizing. It's those one-on-one conversation, educating workers. It's never going to end. They will always be fighting for the rights of working class and the rights of the rank and file members of the Teamsters. They've been doing it since 1976. From 1976 to about, I believe it was 88 or 89 or maybe even 90 when they first got their first democratically elected international officer, Ron Carey. And then they went on strike with him. He took them on strike in 97, our first reform leader. And after he left, then we were down again. It was like, again, this giant of a union goes to sleep. Well, I'll tell you what, that sleeping giant is waking up again. It may have took another 15, 20 years, but we're back. And it's from the bottom up, rank and file workers changing leadership at the top, just like it always was.
Well, the writers union, in the screenwriters. Mm-hmm. They are being pushed to the absolute wall. Yep. There is no glitz and glamour for them. They are really hard-pressed. Most of them can't pay a fundamental rent. Many of them actually qualify for SNAP benefits and welfare benefits. So your thoughts about the kind of unity of purpose and the different unions really cohering as a labor movement to really build the power of the working class.
These corporations have so much power, and the reason they have so much power is because they have so much money. They can use that money to pretty much buy off any politician, they can buy off any judge, and they can create legislation that over time has hindered us. It has weakened our unions, and this is why we're where we're at today. That's why you're seeing the resurgence of the labor movement. You're seeing unions, workers wanting unions and fighting back because workers are being tired of being exploited, like those workers you're speaking of. It's going to take an army of organizers. It's going to take an army of unions working together to fight them. We can't do it on our own. It can't be just the Teamsters. It can't be just RWDSU. It can't be just the UFT. We have to learn as unions to start fighting together. We have to find a way to bring them all together, and this way we could take on those corporations as one big united front. That's the only way we're going to win.
How is the union mobilizing for these events and the contract negotiations?
Well, in our union, in Teamsters Local 804, and a lot of locals across the country in the Teamster Union, we started surveying our members, going and asking the members what it was that their issues were, what they wanted changed, and we got a long, long list of things. And then now we're in the process of educating our workers about what we can do to change those things and how it works in negotiations. It's about educating our members, right? Letting them know what's possible and what's not. We're not going to candy coat anything to our members. And it's about contract action team training, where we're setting up contract action teams in every facility, having our workers talking to other workers, educating them about the possibilities of strike, what can come from a strike, how much the company can lose in a strike, disposing of all the lies that the company likes to spew at them, like Amazon and the post office and FedEx are going to come and be able to do our work. That's ridiculous. We do 20 million packages per day. There's no company that can absorb. They can barely handle their own packages. They're going to handle our volume? I don't think so. And then they say they have a contingency plan for us. There is no contingency plan for 350,000 workers hitting the streets. Absolutely not. They know that if they don't bargain in good faith, eventually they're in big trouble. And essentially, they can spark something that could be revolutionary come August 1st. If by July 31st they don't give in to our demands, they're going to be looking at some serious trouble, because it's not going to be just UPS workers on those picket lines. It's going to be communities, organizations, and other unions showing these people that we're willing to push back.
And Anthony, we didn't ask you. Tell us your full name. Tell us the work that you do. And, of course, your Teamsters Local 804 and TDU and an activist.
My name is Antonio Daniel Rosario, right? I'm born of two Puerto Rican parents. My father passed away in 1992, where my mother was struggling to keep the house that we had that he had purchased in 1979. Around 93, I tried to go to college, but I saw that my mother was struggling. So in 94, I found a job with UPS. It's a part-time preloader, loading trucks in the morning, making about $5.50 above minimum wage. Because I found that job, I was able to help my mom keep that house, and that's why I believe in this Teamster movement. We're going to continue fighting as Teamsters, and right now, you know, I went from that into becoming the 1997 strike, which was one of the biggest, largest strikes in history. I was only 22 years old. I'm going to show you that picture. And then after that, it was all downhill. Again, the giant went back to sleep, and here we are 20 years later, and I'm feeling like that young 22-year-old kid again, ready at the front doors
you
to strike.
You're not 22.
No, not anymore. So now, you know, I drove a package car and delivered packages to the community for almost 20 years. And then now recently, over the last year, I've been organizing. I'm an organizer with the International Union, helping out my local in the efforts of the possible strike campaign. And also, you know, part of what they call the Amazon Division, built to build solidarity with Amazon workers and teach them about collective power.
Antonio, gracias por todo, for the working class, for all you do. And I hope we don't, but we'll see you on the picket line if we need to and be right there with you. And I say this as a loyal UAW member.
I hope to see you on that picket line. I got a sign for you.
Got it. And you got a shirt.
I got
what
a shirt.
That shirt?
It says, ready to strike if we have to. And you know you're darn right we're ready to strike if we have to. We're preparing for it.
Said we're with you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys. I'll see you then.
Okay. All right. Absolutely. You'll see us before then. Antonio Rosario, who's a member, who's been a member of Teamsters for a Democratic Union, is a member of Teamster Local 804 and is raising hell for a fair contract, particularly as negotiations have broken down between the UPS and its Teamsters represented workers, the workers of UPS, weeks before their contract is set to expire. So we want to welcome you, Antonio Rosario. The UPS workers across the country have been holding practice pickets, holding signs that say, just practicing for a just contract. Antonio Rosario, what's happening?
Well, I think sometimes when you want to talk about what's happening now, it's good to take a look at the past. And if you'll remember the 1934 Minneapolis strikes, or even the strikes of the miners over time, if you look back all the way to the railroad strikes in the late 19th century, I think that in today's world, you're seeing what happened back then, where workers were really tired. And this is what it takes sometimes for us to get there. Workers are really tired of being squeezed for everything. People see how capitalism is just taking over, whether it comes to paying lobbyists, whether it comes to greasing the politicians' hands so that they can create law that's literally weakening us over time, because they know the power that we have as workers, especially us UPS workers in the logistics industry. When you say that we're talking about the largest strike in history, you're totally right. And I got to experience just a little taste of that when I was a young man at about 23 years old in 1997. I got to experience just a taste of that. And it meant a lot to me because my father had passed away in 1992. And when I got the job at UPS at 1994, I knew that getting that job and being in the union would be able to help me keep my mother from losing her home. So when workers see that they can get victories by fighting, and, you know, the 97 strike was huge, I got... You know, it created like 10,000 new full-time jobs. There were so many things that we had won in that contract, especially for me as a part-timer who was making $9.50 an hour, which was technically not too bad back then. Wasn't great, but I was still making well above minimum wage, unlike today, these workers who are just at minimum wage. And this fight right here, honestly, it's down to that minimum wage. That's what it's become a fight for, the part-timers. Just like in 97, it's like history repeating itself over and over and over again. Here we are in 1997, and we were fighting for part-timers, and here we are now in 2023, and again, the fight is for part-timers. All the work that we've done building up this contract campaign from a year out last August, having rallies, having getting our workers inspired and preparing for a real strike threat on this corporation that has taken advantage of its workers for over 20-something years while Hoffa was in power. I think it says something. The workers finally united, got together, you know, thanks for the Teamsters United coalition and, you know, the TDU rank-and-file members who were really helping push this through with all the other rank-and-file Teamsters. Like, it was really a combined effort of workers all fighting together to change leadership at the top. And we're at a point now where we're taking control back. We're showing them that you can't make all this money off of our backs and think that we're going to continue to stand around. Just like in 1934, just like, you know, workers, when they get to that point that you just can't squeeze them anymore, they get tired and they get fed up and they're frustrated. And you're not just seeing it at UPS. You're seeing it with Amazon workers who technically right now are striking in California. From what I understand, they've extended their strikes from California to the East Coast and parts of Connecticut and Jersey. Like, all workers are fed up. Chipotle workers are unionizing. cannabis workers are unionizing. Trader Joe's workers are unionized. Starbucks, over 300 stores unionizing, still fighting for a contract. And why are they still fighting for a contract? Because these laws aren't helping us. They're always helping them. And we have to change that. And again, the way to do it is to just straight up sometimes withhold your labor and show them that they can't make all that capital. They can't make all that money without us. And that's the one way they're going to learn. And I'm so proud of the Sean O'Brien leadership. I'm so proud of the negotiating committee, of all those rank-and-file workers who stood up for part-timers finally after all this time. We got so many wins over the last few weeks. They got air conditioning in our vehicles. We got Martin Luther King Day as a holiday. They removed language from a contract. That's never been done that I remember in a long time. It's very difficult once you give something up, which was given up in 2018, to get that back. Elimination of that two-tier 24 job, 22-4 job. And
explain a little bit more about that, Antonio.
Well, the 22-4 job was that in 2018 during that contract. That's the one that Hoffa and his team decided to ram down the membership's throat using an old archaic two-thirds rule because two-thirds of the membership didn't vote. But the amount of members, I can't remember exactly, it was right below 100,000 that did vote, voted against this contract. And that two-tier job was created, which created a big divide between the regular package car drivers, which are now known as RPCDs, and the 22-4, who was essentially sold as a position where they would work a combination inside the building and help relieve drivers of overtime. But they were never used for that. And most locals, they were used exactly just being drivers. Another driver at a lower rate with no overtime protection. Our drivers have overtime protections where they can go on a 9-5 list, and they can actually put in a grievance for forcing them to work over 9.5 hours in more than 3 days. And you get a monetary penalty, a really good one, where you're getting the day plus double time, so it's basically triple time. And they can put in for an 8-hour request load if they want to get off early the day after. Just put in a request load a day before, and they can work just a straight 8-hour day, no overtime. But these 22-4s, they're like a secondary two-tier job that was created. That's, these kids, they see them talking about that, like, hey, you know, you got a request load? How do I get that? Well, I'm sorry, that's not in your language. You don't get that. Well, you're on the 9-5 list. Can I get on the 9-5 list? No, I'm sorry, that's not in the language. They can exploit and control and obliterate that poor driver, whoever's doing the job. That poor person has no protections against overtime, and they really overwork them and take advantage and exploit these workers. And it's over with. That's another thing. So Martin Luther King, the 22-4 job that's gone now, you know, protections against overtime. In some parts of the country, during the pandemic, these workers were working 6 days a week. No time to be home with your family. It's disrespectful and a horrible attack on the working class man and woman. I mean, you're forcing them. What quality of life can you have working 6 days a week, 10, 11-hour days, and then working and putting your life on the line? The more you work, the tired you are, the easier and more susceptible you are to get the virus. And it's just like they don't even care, which we always knew they don't care. That's the bottom line. But at this point, when you're actually doing something where you're helping people, you're essential, because while people are in their homes hiding because they're scared of getting sick, you're out there putting your life on the line, your family's lives at risk. I remember workers who would go into the garage, take their clothes off, and jump in the shower before they even were near their family and still put a mask on because they're still worried they can pass it on. Like, this was the conditions we were working under. And then the company tried to use, you know, all types of HIPAA law to keep people from knowing who had it and who had contracted it. And it was just ridiculous. And it was such a difficult time. And still, here we are fighting them, because they don't want to. And at the end, after we won all these things, like I mentioned, we had the economic proposal, which we put on the table, a good economic proposal that shows the company that they can actually do the right thing and pay our workers what they deserve. And their counter proposal was just completely disrespectful to the work. It was a slap in the face to the working people in that company. Those Teamsters, those UPS Teamsters, were told 50 cents is enough for 3 years. I believe it was $2.85 in a five-year progression, getting 50 to 60 cents here and there during the 5 years. Now, I tell you, can you imagine that kind of proposal with these workers, all the work that they did, the way they've been treated, certain locals working 6 days a week, these part-time workers who are inside getting minimum wage, and the company has the nerve to put out and says our part-timers get $20, and on top of getting $20 an hour, they also have great benefits. Now, I will not deny that our part-timers have pretty good benefits, but those $20 an hour only goes to particular areas where they have MRAs, which are market rate adjustments, and those particular jobs, they're working for the most part at $15-16 an hour at that low minimum wage. But in particular areas where they have trouble getting workers, like let's say a part of Seattle or in a very rural area where it's hard to find workers, they'll bring up the salary to lure those workers to do the job.
Well,
so
let me.
You have to ask yourself. Go ahead.
Well, I want to.
Long-winded because I'm very.
No, you're not. You're telling it like it is, and that's the passion, and that's the passion of the working class, and that's what we mean by putting the movement back in the labor movement. Antonio, punctuate that fiery speech, that heartfelt concern for the working class. What do we need to do to make sure that there isn't a UPS strike, but if there is, that we are 100% with the workers? You tell it like it is.
Well, I'll just say this. The last day of negotiations was the 5th. And if you guys didn't hear, it really bad around 4:15 a.m. where the company said they've given all they can give. And what we were fighting for is those part-timers. That part-time is all we need them to do. If they want us to sign this contract, all they need us to do, if they want to avert us going on strike, if they want to avert them literally striking themselves, like Sean O'Brien said, it's a self-inflicted wound, because all they have to do is pay our part-timers what they deserve, and we're done, and this contract would be signed. It's that simple. But we're dealing with a very greedy corporation, so I could see them being that they cut their nose off to spite their own face. And I know what's going to happen. And I'm saying this because we've been, you know, we want them to come and just give the part-timers what they want. But we as workers are not going to take it. We as workers are going to back up. And, you know, I'm so proud of Sean O'Brien, because at the end of the day, a lot of other people could have just said, you know what, we got so much already. Let's just, the part-timers will just get what it is and sell them out. And they did not sell out our part-timers. You know, right now we could sign a fairly good contract and get all the things we need with the exception of that part-time wage, and our membership would not sell out the part-timers. And I think that means a great deal, because our part-time workforce is pretty solid. They're the backbone of this company. They fill up those trucks that these drivers go out and deliver. They're out there just like the drivers, working in heat and cold, and they deserve it. So I tell you this, and Biden stepping in, right? I think Sean O'Brien mentioned it first, like growing up in those tough neighborhoods in Boston, and even me as a young Puerto Rican kid in East New York, if you saw two people that knew each other having a fight, which is basically us and the company, and we're having a situation, you stayed out of it. You know, you stayed out of it and you let them do what they had to do, because it doesn't concern you. So I think that's where we're at with that. And I believe that Sean O'Brien made it very clear that all they have to do, if they don't want to strike themselves, is just make sure you take care of our part-timers, you know, because right now it's looking good for the full-time drivers. It's looking good for everybody with a lot of the things that we've won over the last few months in these great negotiations. And, you know, I would say a little help due to a lot of the practice picketing that was going on. And, you know, the workers are ready. And it's not just us. We're not just out there on our own. There's a lot of organizations we're getting help from. You know, there's a lot of great organizations out there like Make the Road, Align, DSA. I mean, we've made some great friendships over time, and not just them, our customers as well, who our customers know we were out there protecting them during the pandemic. And we're ready. And we're not going to be out there on those picket lines on our own. There's going to be tons of people out there with us if we have to strike. And, you know, if they're smart and they don't want to lock up 6% of that GDP that can potentially cripple the economy, then I suggest they pay our part-timers what they deserve.
Well,
so the message to UPS is pay up for part-time, pay up to the UPS Teamsters.
Remember, no American union has come close to approximating the revolutionary potential and dynamism of the IWW, but perhaps the Teamsters will, and with the spurring forward and the really rejuvenation as a result of being pushed by Teamsters for a Democratic Union and democratizing that union base. Hey, Sean O'Brien, take it on home for a full home run. Antonio Rosario, you are fire, and we are hoping that, well, hey, the Teamsters, maybe they'll take it forward and adopt that revolutionary potential and dynamism, because workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains.
And a world to win.
Indeed. Thank you, Antonio Rosario, Teamster, working to prevent a UPS strike, but he'll take it on and to the final conclusion if we need to. We are building bridges. Thank you for joining us. Stay strong and pay close attention.
This is for all you big government Wall Street types.
Well, I was watching TV at election time. There were two candidates trying to lay it on the line. One of them looked like he was training to be cute. He was a white man in a business suit. I looked at the other, he was equally astute. He was a white man in a business suit. Well, they kept on talking, they didn't make sense. They both seemed to be on the same side of the fence. There was no real debate, it was a phony dispute. They were just two white men in business suits. If you want to be the president, better learn to salute and be a white man in a business suit. He's a white man. A single one of them are in cahoots. He's running the U.S., Europe, and Russia, too.